Hi, welcome to the UCB Theater Podcast, episode 32. I decided to start calling them episodes this week. Will isn't here, so I'm going to do whatever the fuck that I want. And rather than dating them, I'm just going to call them by their episode numbers. I think this is episode 32. It's just me. Will isn't here. He's moving or some junk like that. But I would just want to say for the record that I offered to help him move as a friend, and he didn't even respond. And that was a sincere offer to help him, not just an obligatory, oh, you're moving, I'll help you out. No, I sincerely offered my help. So, you know, I hope he's doing fine without me. Okay, so we're here with the lovely and talented Leslie Mizell. Hello.
Hey there. Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. Happy to be here.
Good. Yeah, we're happy to have you. I'm happy
to
have
you. You are. Will is
no,
has nothing to say.
He's actually not even moving. He just heard that you were going to be on. And
oh, is that like, right?
Yeah, no way. I'm not associating with her.
Okay, fair enough. Make sure to talk to Will about that.
Yeah. Talk to him off the air about it.
Will do. No, on the air. No, we're bringing him in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be next week.
Yeah.
Next week we'll have him in.
We'll call him in.
Yeah. So I wanted you to come in today to talk about your show, Love Can Suck a Dick and So Can I.
Yeah.
And just also your whole history as a performer here and a person and just a powerhouse of comedy and talent.
Hey-o! All right. That's amazing. Thank you.
Yeah. So let's start with how you got here. Talk to us about how you found UCB, how you got started here.
Sure. Okay. So I moved to New York, and at first I was going to move to Chicago because I had heard about Second City.
Mm-hmm. Where did you move from?
Florida.
Okay.
And so I moved here, and I was trying to figure out the improv scene, like comedy, and so I found out that Second City was actually in New York at that time, mm-hmm. and I was taking classes with Martin DeMott, who was starting up sort of a New York company or cast or training center. And at that time, I met Lennon Parham and Molly Prather through the Second City group.
Okay, and what year is this?
Oh, you want, like, dates? Okay.
Yeah.
So that was probably 98, 99.
Okay.
Yeah, so I came here. I don't know why I was weird about the dates, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's all right.
All right. So 98, 99. And so we started improvising at the Comedy Cellar, but it didn't really take off from there. Like, we were all a part of this group. We did a showcase at PSNBC, but there was no other place to, like, continue training.
Mm-hmm.
And so Molly found UCB. I think she was the first person who came over, and that was when the theater was at the other location.
Mm-hmm.
And I started working for Second City Business Theater, and that was around 2000.
Okay.
And then 2001 came along, and it kind of got defunct after September 11th and the business industry, so that fell apart, and mm-hmm. I was looking for a place to continue learning and you know, learning the most of this craft so I can be the best at it and educate myself and get as much training as I could.
Yeah.
And Molly spoke so highly of UCB, so then I jumped in and I started taking classes around 2001, 2002. And, you know, I took classes from Billy Merritt mm-hmm. and Julie Brister, Jackie Clark, like all those guys.
Yeah, all great.
All amazing.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I just felt like I laughed in class for like an hour. Do you know? Everything was like a giggle factory. It was just like, go have fun, be free, you know, and all that stuff. And I think the classes were like class A and B or level one and two.
Yeah, it was level, back then it was 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah. And you would have to wait in line to sign up.
Mm-hmm.
And the line would go all the way around and you could pay by, you know, check or whatever, but it wasn't by computer or anything.
Yeah, and it was like Susan and Jackie sitting there, like, taking your check.
You know, thank you.
Filling out your application.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So we started doing that. And then, you know, and Lennon came, and it was nice to, know them and then get this new community.
Mm-hmm.
So then after that, then Harold auditions came about,
mm-hmm.
and I auditioned for Harold teams. And at first I didn't get placed, But then, like, 6 months later, I got asked to be – I got put on Dr. Awesome.
Okay.
And the first time I'd ever done a Harold outside of a class was the first night of Harold night.
Really?
Yeah. And it was, like, insane.
So you weren't a part of any, like, practice groups or anything like that? You were just taking classes and
– Taking classes and, you know, writing characters and wanting to eventually do a one-woman show.
Sure.
But other than that, not outside. And so I remember walking out on that stage and being like, holy shitballs, you know? Like,
yeah.
This energy is amazing.
That was your first time on the UCB stage other than, like, classes than and class shows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was it. And I think Del Close Marathon might have been around the same time.
Okay.
Or, like, a week later or something like that. And Eli called me up and he's like, it was some message that's like, you're on Dr. Awesome. We're on at 3 a.m. You better be there.
Wow.
You know, or something like that. But
yeah, because Dr. Awesome was Eli and Julie, right? Was Julie on at that time?
Julie.
Or Klausner?
I think I might have replaced her.
Okay.
But it was Terry Jin, Doug Moe, Mark Lepus, Sam Riegel, Amy Rhodes, Eli.
Yeah, this is why we need Will.
Oh.
Will has a much better memory for these things than
I do. Yeah. Oh, and Oliver Rally.
Oh, that's it. Yes,
yeah.
Oliver
Rally. How could I miss? Yeah, Oliver Rally.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So during that time, you're taking classes and you're writing stuff at home for yourself, but you're not really – were you going out and performing it at all? Okay.
No, because I came from like Second City was very much like getting sketched through improv. And I think, you know, we were performing in like Comedy Cellar or stand-up places.
Sure.
And it didn't really have a theater. So I wasn't exactly sure how to use the community that I was now in at UCB. So I felt like not only am I learning a different technique on improv, I'm learning a whole new form. And so the stuff that I was working on the side, I just didn't know like what to do with it. I didn't know how to make it into a show, or it wasn't really stand-up, but it's not really theater. And so, and at the time, you know, UCB was very much on, in my mind anyway, improv shows, the forms and stuff. So I didn't feel 100% to jump in and like do character work then. It was just more focusing on the Herald and what that is. And you know, you get like, it's sort of a warrior sense with it because you're like, I want to figure it out. I want to get to it. I want to attack it. I want to do it well. And so I just sort of immersed myself in the Herald.
You said something that actually made me think of something I wanted to ask you about. You talked about learning a new technique. What was your training and experience prior to coming to New York?
With improv?
With improv, with theater. Like, I'm assuming, am I correct in assuming that this was after college that you moved up to New York? So did you study theater and acting in college?
I did, yeah. I got my really useful degree in theater.
Which one? Did you get a BA or BFA? What kind of degree you got?
I got a BA.
Yeah, I have a BA in theater.
With honors. I graduated with honors.
I mean, really, you know, to be fair to ourselves, we are using our degrees. I mean, you know, I have a job in the theater. And
that's
you,
true.
Also are using your degree, so
every
little bit of experience helps.
Agreed. but it's just, it's a,
But
it's
that being said, there's never going to be any job where it's like, present your diploma in theater.
Yeah.
Present your BA.
Yeah, and I also realize, like, no one really reads it. Like, the facts, I mean, I'm not saying anyone should, like, lie on their resume.
Right.
But, like, if I got out of whatever college and I just put, like, better, you know, in quotes, college than what I went to. I feel like no one's going to call me on it. They'll be like, oh, you went to Juilliard. Amazing. You know?
As of now, we all went to Yale.
Exactly.
As of this moment, we're all going to say that we went to Yale.
Right. Exactly.
So what kind of stuff did you, what was the technique that you studied in college? Just because I'm curious.
Oh, it's funny that you ask because I really don't feel like I got any real technique until I came to New York, to be honest.
Interesting.
I felt like I learned a lot about the history of theater and, like, stagecraft. And I don't know if it was the teachers or where I was just young. And, you know, I didn't really want to stay in college. I wanted to leave early and just come to New York. So I don't know. We learned a lot of, like, Stanislavski and Alexander, not so much Meisner. You know, and it was like, how to beat out a script, you know, how to take a script and check it out. But it was felt very, I don't know if mathematical is the right word, but it felt very cerebral on a level that I just felt like there's more out there than what I'm being taught.
Mm-hmm.
Great college, great people. And, you know, there was one teacher that when I was in a play, I was an understudy I was in Tartuffe, and he used to be a Broadway director, the professor. And he did the production as if you were in a professional show. And that was the best experience and the most I got out of doing a show.
Mm-hmm.
But it really wasn't until I started studying with Suzanne Shepherd up here on Meisner Technique that I felt like I learned something useful for me. I think everybody, you know, connects to a teacher or a process.
Sure.
And just for me, it just happened to be later with a different.
So you think it was the Meisner Technique that connected with you more than the stuff that you were learning?
100%.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, when I was in college, I was a BFA acting major for a while, and then I dropped out of that program for dumb reasons.
Which are?
I was with a group. This is not about me, okay? But I was performing with a group that got this very big project that we thought we would be working on forever.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, in my young, 20-year-old naivete, I was like, I'm not going to have time for the BFA program anymore.
Right.
And then a couple of months after I changed my major to BA, the project completely fell through and fell apart. But we were studying, Stanislavski, just like you said, Stanislavski and Alexander Technique and stuff like that. And it never really connected with me. Like, I hated all of that, like, choose a secret for your character, all that stuff. Like, I never felt like it was working.
Yeah, it didn't do anything. Like I say now, does it help you or hurt you? Does it do anything for you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so if you're choosing or working with stuff that just sort of is like, it's okay. Like, that's how you sort of respond. Like, if someone says, like, well, what animal is your character?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the sort of thing you connect to, but you go, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm a cat. And why even invite that idea for you?
Sure.
If it's not going to, invoke any, passion or emotion or, action for you to, go for it, then don't worry about it. It's not for you. And that's great. Like, recognize that and move on. Like, don't think about an animal. That's not, doing anything for you.
Sure. So, whatever, if there's a technique or something that you're being taught and you're just not into it, it's not connecting with you, find something else.
Yeah,
it's perfectly
because there's
okay.
a ton out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once you find what works for you, like the possibilities of you creating stuff, whether it's a play or sketch or helping somebody else figure their way, it just becomes more powerful once you can recognize it and move on.
Because
I think it's okay if those things don't work for you. Yeah, 100%.
That's great. Advice.
Yeah. Oh.
So you're on Dr. Awesome at this point. You
do
your first Harold ever that's
insane.
Not in a class, and
oh
you're
my gosh.
Terrified.
Terrified. I think we might have come out to Def Leppard. I feel like it's a memory as if it's a concert, And I remember the suggestion, and it was just.
What was the suggestion?
Or remember getting the suggestion. Like, I think I did, not surprising, a gypsy character. I think someone walked out, I think, in the middle of, maybe they had to go to the bathroom, who knows.
Uh-huh.
But I remember calling them out. It's just you just go out there and you, have to attack it. And I think Eli and I, at some point, maybe did push-ups, which is possible. and there was a courtroom scene. It was just the feeling was overwhelming, and the support that crew had for me was so great. It was so inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Always.
So you get off stage from that and you're like, this is it. I feel great. You're on a huge high.
Huge high. I'm like, let's do this again. And and every time I would be so scared. I would be shitting my pants before almost every show.
Really?
And cage match freaks me out beyond belief, because you would go against, at that time, it was you and another Harold team, as opposed to now it's pretty open.
Yeah, a lot of indie teams, things like that, yeah.
Which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But be funny and God, do that. And you're trying to remember everything before you step out on stage. And, I think it's very overwhelming, and you have to have a really great sense of yourself, I think, in looking back anyway, to be successful like in Harold. So it's almost like jump into the fear with confidence as opposed to being freaked out before every show, you know?
Sure.
Because everyone's staring at you. The pressure, you know, you're just feeling it.
And, yeah. You have to be able to block that out. You have to be able to just muster up, like you said. You have to know that you are good enough and funny enough. And who gives a fuck what anybody else thinks.
Yeah, just be there with your crew.
Yeah, it's a terrifically difficult thing to actually get to.
Yeah.
But how did you, was there any specific way that you got to that place? Was it just talking yourself through it or what?
Yeah, it was knowing that I was improvising with what I felt was like the best, some of the best improvisers like around. And they all had my back and supported. So I never felt for one moment that if I made a choice that it was the wrong one, because I always made it feel like it was the best move I could have ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew how priceless that experience was. Also, Eli and I would do push-ups before every show. We do like 20 push-ups.
Eli loved doing push-ups before
shows.
Loved
it. And also, you know, sometimes we do a little, you know, a little shot of Jack. You know, we do whatever.
Sure.
That was mostly for cage match.
Uh-huh. And this is Eli Newell that we're talking. Yes. I don't think we mentioned his full name, but everybody out there knows Eli Newell. I'm sure he was a performer here for a while.
Yeah.
He ran Torco for a long time. He's on Delocated.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you guys were doing push-ups and shots
push-ups,
of Jack.
Shots of Jack. It was a crazy time back then, those kids.
Sure.
But, you know, those things aren't – the push-ups are good. Don't do the Jack. You don't need the Jack.
Yeah.
I'm not saying
– Yeah, lay off the – some people do. I never did, and I certainly don't now, but I was never – well, there was a brief period where I did drink a lot before shows, but generally I don't think it helped my – performance
yeah.
at all. But for some people it does, you know.
Well, I think like if I had to analyze it, you know, it just it gives you that like courage or you're for 1 second you're not editing yourself and you almost have to you almost could say, well, it's because I had a little Jack, you know what
right.
I mean? And it's also in working with a lot of stand-up comedians, the ones that I know that drank heavily and then kind of had some success with their stand-up. Once they stop drinking, they have a very hard time believing and going back to their comedy because they don't have that vice anymore.
Sure.
So it's an interesting journey back to, you know, doing it without that.
Yeah, I always think that the best thing to do is be able to tap into that naturally, you know, because really what you're doing is you're drinking to override, like you said, the fear, the self-consciousness, the inability to, like, believe in yourself or trust in yourself, really.
Yeah.
And I feel like the best way to do it is, like, find some natural way to get to that
point. I think so. Yeah, I mean, there's, like, the balance. Like, sometimes, you know, I've had a drink before a show, but you're, like, you're having fun. So I think it's just realizing, I think there came to a point where, like, I don't really want this drink, but really nervous. I need to, like, you know, shake the jitters or whatever. So I think it's obviously is unless it gets sort of in a place where you feel like you're doing it so you can be more aggressive on stage or something. I feel like for me anyway, I was like, oh, I think I could do that without that element.
So how long were you on Dr. Awesome for?
I guess I was on Dr. Awesome. I feel like it was like a year.
Okay.
A year or so.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
And then Dr. Awesome was busted up, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It had been around for a long time. And we did one last show with, like, every Dr. Awesome member. I think it was, like, 20.
Wow. Oh, yeah. I remember hearing about this.
Yeah. It was – I forgot what theater it was at. I don't think it was at UCB, or it might have been in the middle when the new place was opening. So
right.
They would do shows at other places.
Yeah, in Brooklyn or there were some other places.
There's one other, yeah. So we did one last show with everyone. And everyone, you know, it was great. So then most of us got placed on other teams.
Mm-hmm.
And I was placed on the Rockets.
Here we go.
Oh.
This is one of the things I was looking forward to talking to you about.
We throw up on the microphone.
So you were on the Rockets.
Yeah.
Which is considered to be one of the worst Harold teams.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
It's considered to be one of the worst?
Well, they were. You guys were not together for very long, right?
Maybe 5 months.
Yeah.
6 months? 5 to 6 months.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was the experience of – I actually, first of all, I thought that you knew that. I thought that was like – universally.
No, but is that, thank you so much for bringing that to my attention.
Not because of any individual members, just because sometimes teams don't work.
Sometimes teams don't work.
So what was the experience
in
of
history,
being on?
Wait, I'm sorry, in Herald history?
No, just in your team.
Okay.
Yeah, in the history of Herald Night, you know, you put combinations of people together. And, you know, I mean, that's the crazy thing about improv, about Harold and about all that, is you could take eight great players, put them together, and then for some reason the chemistry just doesn't work. Or you could take eight, you know, like okay players, put them together, and all of a sudden they're greater than the sum of their parts.
That's right.
I mean, any good Harold team is greater than the sum of its parts, but that's the weird, uncontrollable, unpredictable chemistry of Harold teams, of any kind of improv group, really.
That's right.
So you were on the Rockets. So
on the Rockets.
Yeah. So talk to me about the Rockets.
Talk to you about the Rockets. Well, so we all got together. So people from Dr. Awesome, I think, that moved over with me might have only been Eli and Oliver Raleigh.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone else was new or came from other places.
Okay.
I think Kevin Hines was on it for a hot second.
Yeah, he was.
Towards the end.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
It's crazy.
So, Kevin, you were on.
Oh, he knows.
No, I know, he knows. I know. Well, if you're going to go down big, you know, or going to go down, go big.
Yep.
Yeah, so we were doing shows. It was tough. I'll tell you, it was the fun that I had in Dr. Awesome. It was definitely, those 5 months were like a struggle. I will say that. The notes were tough. The shows were tough.
Like, what kind of notes were you getting?
Why would you make those choices? Like, really just, like, whoever was giving us notes would be like, what was going through your head for you to do that?
Hmm.
You know, like, things, just not understanding why we were making the moves we were making. But then, weirdly enough, for me anyway, we would do shows kind of outside the theater, like at Gowanus in Brooklyn, or I forgot another place. And I felt like those shows were like fun and loose.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, at the theater, the shows just weren't coming together.
Yeah, isn't that fucking crazy how that happens? Because I've been on teams where that happens too. You do shows outside the watch of the theater and that general kind of vibe of, like, we know that we're being analyzed and all that. And for some reason, they're better, and then you can't recapture that energy when you're on Harold Night.
Yeah, like, I remember specifically doing a show at Gowanus, scenes with Kevin. And although I can look back and see some bumps in the road, like, I had a great time, and I was aggressive and made moves and committed, you know, all that stuff that we do. But when we were doing shows at the theater, I literally, after the show was done, even if some people thought it was a great show, I had to leave the theater and I'd walk around the block two times.
Huh.
Because I'm like, how is that like, if someone was like, that's a good show, I was like, how do you accept that as a good show?
Right.
So a part of my want to improve and know the potential that not only we all have, but the potential that I was capable of, and not hitting that just bugged the shit out of me. So I would, like, walk around the block twice so that my feelings either on my own self in the show, I didn't want to, like, affect anybody else how they felt. Because sometimes, as you know, like, you'll do a show and maybe everyone said some funny things or felt like they had a good show, but you said a couple things that didn't get a laugh, so you're like, shitty show for you,
right?
But great show for the team.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So
yeah, you forget that it's a team art, and you just take it all out on. Or that's what I do. I momentarily forget that it's like eight people making a great thing. I just think, oh no, I was terrible.
Yeah.
I really fucking shit the crib.
Right. I like that. I shit the crib. So a lot of times I felt like I shit the crib, and so I'd walk around and I'd be like, you know, I just didn't get it. So it was really unfun for a long time.
What do you think the difference was? Like, you talked about being on Dr. Awesome and feeling that great self-confidence, being able to kind of get past all of that.
Yeah.
And with this, now you're kind of in your head and you've lost that self-confidence. Do you think there was anything specific that caused that?
I think I guess a couple things, like in looking back, maybe. I think one is when we were all together, we kind of felt like, how long are we going to last, guys? You know?
Really?
Yeah, I think it was just like, the first show was amazing. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it just, for some reason, I don't know if there's the energy and we were making fun of, things, but it just felt like something was off, right? So mm-hmm. we would kind of joke around about that. I think the other thing was I just got in my head because I would get a lot of notes about choices that I made were too character and not on game. So I would follow the journey of a character more than I would sometimes follow the game. And even to this day, I think about those things that being true to the character. Sometimes my head just, and it might be the actor think, I want to see how this character reacts to this, but I kind of needed to be a little bit more malleable with my character hat, because sometimes I make choices that weren't on game,
mm-hmm.
but still seemed fun. And then sometimes I'd make a choice, I do the first scene, and it was a fucking amazing scene, but I had no idea what to do with the second beat.
Mm.
It was almost like I'd go on the back line and go, oh, my God, I don't remember anything.
Huh.
It was just, I was so in the moment.
Right.
And not thinking about, I didn't have Leslie on the sideline going, pay attention here, hold on to this in your pocket.
Right.
I would just be in the moment, do a great scene, and then go back and be like, yeah, oh, my God, I got to do another one. Oh, shit, what just happened? And then I'm thinking about that, and I'd miss what's happening on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I would get notes about the character stuff, I think I just analyzed it too much. I think I was just in my head.
Sure.
It was like I got in my own way. I just blocked myself from so then I was really self-conscious. I was not being aggressive because mm-hmm. I didn't want to make the wrong move instead of just making a move. And then when I would make a move, it felt weird. And then sometimes we would get notes, and I couldn't explain why I made the move I did.
Mm-hmm.
So then I think all those pieces came up, and I think that's why at the end of the day, I got let go and the team got, disbanded and broken up. Because I think even if I had a great show, even afterwards getting notes, and this is when Ian Roberts were, all those great guys were giving us notes and challenging us to be the best.
Right.
And he would ask me, and I really couldn't, for the most part, I couldn't give you an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had to figure out if I want to be successful in Herald, I got to know how to answer those questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So interesting.
This is a very serious podcast here.
Of course it is.
Yeah,
this is serious.
I like it.
This
All
is
right,
like this serious, is nerdy business.
I love it. I'm a fan.
Good. Okay. Me too.
Yeah, great.
Originally I thought this podcast was going to be a big chuckle fest.
Yeah.
But it has turned into, it has evolved from its humble beginnings to just a nerdy conversation.
Totally,
that
yeah.
is also funny.
Totally, but it's better than hearing my cackle, for the whole hour.
Oh, no, I love it. Your cackle is music to my ears.
Oh, really?
Are you kidding me?
Well, it's like chalkboards to other people.
Well.
I was with my husband, and we passed by a place called Giggles.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I was – and I was like, oh, that should be my place, Giggles. And he's like, no, hon, your place is called Cackles. And I was like, you're right.
Wow.
Yeah,
that
I love
is a
him.
Serious burn from your husband.
But it's true. I mean, I have a – the horrible version of what Julia Roberts has.
Okay.
That's, so endearing.
Right.
I feel like mine is, totally the comedic, horrible side of that.
I don't know. Right. I think it's wonderful.
Thank you.
So
we digress. Okay.
Yeah. So then you, as you mentioned, you got cut from Rockets got disbanded.
Yeah.
You got cut from Harold Knight. You didn't get replaced.
No.
How do you feel at this point?
I think I might have.
Did you?
Great question. I don't know if I got cut, then they had one more show and then got disbanded,
mm-hmm.
or it all busted up. I don't really know the order of
mm-hmm.
anything. I don't know. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
But you didn't get put on another team.
No.
Right.
No.
So how do you feel at this point?
Oh, it hurt. It stung.
Yeah.
I was with I think I was with Molly. We were together working on a spank that we were going to do.
And this is Molly Prather.
Molly
again,
Prather,
right? Who's now in L.A.
Who's now in L.A.
Yeah, she's hilarious.
Hilarious. She was on The Syndicate. I think she got taken off, maybe.
Okay.
There's whatever happened with her story. But I was sitting with her, and I got a message that was we're going to move on without you. And it was something like, you know, it's really up to you if you want to continue, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, on one hand, I was so not, I was not having any fun for the whole, for I would say a good 4 months of performing. But I thought, you know, these are like the growing pains of Harold. You know, sometimes it's not supposed to be fun and you'll like figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So looking back, I was like, well, it wasn't fun and I didn't quit Harold. So life kind of made that decision. So I was like, okay, we'll move on. And on the other side, I was like, so, you know, your ego is hurt. You are like, oh my God, what did I did wrong? You feel like you, no one knows what to say to you. You know, like that night, I think we went to McManus, drank like a ton of beers, mm-hmm. you know, and everyone was really sweet. They're like, I can't believe it, you know, and you got cut. But like, looking back, I understood, like, I get it
mm-hmm.
for me anyway. So yeah, I was totally hurt, you know,
sure.
for a minute. You know, we're all human. So,
yeah.
It definitely stung.
Okay, so yeah. Then what's the next step after that? What do you do then?
So it just so happened that at the same time, either Molly and I were working on a show, but I knew I had a spank in, like, December. And I only know that because Owen, I think, was the artistic director at the time.
Okay.
So I get kicked off, and I'm wondering, like, so what does that mean? Like, I don't know what to do, you know? Mm-hmm. But I have this spank. So I do this one-woman show, and I get great feedback, but it was probably a little bit more like theater, you know, theatrical or whatever. I'm just
right.
getting my hands into, like, what is a one-woman show? What does UCB want? What can I do?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it got picked up, or I got great feedback. I think I got great feedback to, like, improve it.
Okay. What was the show called?
I think it was called Cujulio's Karaoke or You Never Know.
Okay.
It was a show and characters. If you know me, you
right.
know I've been like working on them for like
and
5 years.
Did they take place at a karaoke place?
So that's the one you know.
That right, because that's what I was going to ask you. You seem to have a love affair with solo shows that take place in in the world of karaoke.
I'm a karaoke fiend. Yeah.
Really?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I love it. I went like twice last week.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
What is so addictive to you about it?
It's the moment you get to sing all the songs that you've always wanted to sing. Like, when are you ever going to sing Whitney Houston with the track behind you
mm-hmm.
and a microphone, and then people are stuck in a room where they have to hear you do this? Like, it's the weirdest thing to
me. So the question you're asking is, when are you ever going to have the chance to hold people hostage and make them listen to you sing Whitney Houston?
Yeah, totally. And then if you start to sing it and it's, like, really horrible, you skip it. And then you try another song that you're
sure.
like, who knows? And you do show tunes. Yeah, I'm a karaoke whore.
Okay, so you're doing that show. You get good feedback on it, but it doesn't get a run.
It doesn't get a run. Great mm-hmm. feedback. But now I just feel, and this is only speaking because we're like human, I feel sort of like unfunny or unwanted. And
sure.
I'm like, I don't know what to do.
Because you're in the wake of this big rejection from
yeah.
this thing, and then here comes another little kind of, we're going to pass on this
yeah.
kind of thing. So you're starting to doubt whether you're even in the right business or
totally,
like
yeah. Am I doing the right thing? Because now I get feedback, but the Leslie who's now attacking the new script and making choices is the one that just got, in my mind, told, mm-hmm. like, you're not funny. But looking back, that's not what they're saying.
Sure.
But in the moment, I'm going, well, then I'm going to create this, and do I want to be, like, rejected again?
Mm-hmm.
So you're coming, all these emotions, you know, like, emotions and feelings and thoughts are running through your head. So I said, you know what, let me, so I thought of two things. I'm either going to go back to school to study drama therapy,
huh.
or I'll go to maybe acting, go back to like acting stuff.
Okay.
So I applied to NYU for drama therapy. They only take like 15 students out of everyone that applies.
Okay.
And I was bartending at the time, and Suzanne Shepherd, Meisner acting teacher, came into the bar a few times because she was doing a play down the block from where I was.
Uh-huh.
She's she plays Carmela's mom in Sopranos, if that gives you a
right.
visual of who she is. And she was in Goodfellas, the mom. Mm. Oh, she's amazing. Anyway, so we're joking around at the bar, and I literally at the same, I think it was like the same week or like a couple days from each other, get an acceptance letter to drama therapy.
Wow.
And Suzanne tells me about a class that she's teaching. So, you know, my husband is like super grounded. We go online and we see what jobs are available in the United States for like drama therapy. Mm-hmm. And there weren't that many. It's a very like new thing kind of.
Okay.
So it was
Is it like speech therapy? What is drama therapy exactly?
It's pretty much like acting out things and using techniques that you would in drama towards therapy.
Okay.
So it would
Great.
Be like I mean, we did improv games as part of the – they had, like, two different kinds of application, like one paper and all that. Mm-hmm. And then we actually had to do improv, and a lot of it – so when I'm in – here's an example. When I'm in the – they interview you. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they asked me, they said, let me ask you this, Leslie. If you're in a room and you find that you're with a patient that is very, angry and out of control and yelling and like, you know, like just very aggressive and violent, what would your reaction be? How would you deal with that? And then I said, well, I'm obviously not trained, but I think you would start to mirror them. You would mirror them and, you know, like just like you would in improv. So you mirror their actions and breathing until you don't know who's leading each other. And then you find a place for center. Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, that's exactly what drama therapy is.
Wow.
So it was that, yeah, and then, so, but there aren't that many schools open. So it was a very much a huge path change of either going into debt and finding your own thing or take acting classes.
Okay.
So I took acting classes.
Okay.
Instead, long story short. So I did that for a year and then for a long time with Suzanne. And then I felt ready to go back to improv because Billy Merritt was teaching a class that was character-based. Mm-hmm. So then I came back to UCB.
Okay.
And that was the first improv class that I came back to.
Now, I want to skip ahead just a little bit here.
Yeah, because that was a really long story.
No, it's great. Okay. I just want to touch on something that we've kind of talked about and I was talking to you a little bit about last night.
Yeah.
So you got cut from...
In a public place.
Yeah, in a public place, very loud.
Yes.
You got cut from Harold... You got cut from Harold Knight.
Yes.
And you were told, you know, the show that you spanked wasn't picked up. Now,
right.
Here at the theater currently and for a long time,
yeah.
Being on Harold Knight, getting to Harold Knight is considered kind of the main currency.
Yes.
You know, everybody looks at that as the huge brass ring,
yeah.
You know, the huge symbol of validation.
Uh-huh.
And you had that, and then you had it taken away from you.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of completely giving up on that, you kept working at it, and now, within the past year or so, you've become one of the most respected and funniest people at this theater. You know, like, you have your own show running, you're in another show, Oh My God, I Heard You're Dying. Mm-hmm. You are on Maud Night. You've been on Maud Night for, what, 2 years or so?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
You know, and on, you know, a great Maud team. So... what I'm always curious about is, you know, what kept you going and what kept you, what led you to that decision of like, I have to keep going, I have to find my voice and keep honing my voice, and how did you get there?
I would say it was just like the belief that I knew that I was good and that, like, I just believed in myself. I just had to find my way. Like, I just had to jump in, definitely leave my ego aside. And that gets you really far once mm-hmm. you take your ego sort of out of it.
I have no idea what that's like. No. I hope to be able to. You might have to do some drama therapy to
okay, we'll do that.
Whittle down my tremendous ego coupled with my amazing inferiority complex.
You have none of those things.
Well, I've got you fooled.
Okay.
So you have to put your ego aside.
You have to put your ego aside. For me, I also had to like step away from UCB for a minute mm-hmm. and do some like. Other training that I still knew would make me a stronger performer and then come back. But I will say that it probably didn't need to take as long as it did because looking back, it really, like, you just have to jump in, like, and just, like, if you believe that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, mm-hmm. then you'll find your way. Just try it a different way. It's just a different path. Mm-hmm. You have an unlimited amount of resources here at UCB that you can find your voice and your way, but you have to know who you are and where you fit in, I think, as well. So, like, me leaving and going back to my acting roots, helped me be in a place where I felt strong again. You know, it's almost like you go and train for a little bit to become stronger, and then you come back when you're ready and you're able to, yeah, I took improv classes and then they had mod auditions. And coming from the acting and still doing some improv as much as possible, I was able to come back, but now it was in a different way, mm-hmm. and I could have a different voice. But I don't know if I answered the question specifically.
Yeah.
I think it's...
I always admire and I'm fascinated by people who lose things and then work to get them back in a different way. You know, people
right.
who are not deterred, because it's just as easy to say, well, that's it. You
yeah.
know, I don't fit in here, I'm not wanted here, or I'm not funny,
right.
you know, and just kind of give up. And for some people, that is just a natural, like... Some people, that is the right choice,
yeah.
I guess. You know, some people need that to push them in another, better direction.
Yeah, but, like, what do you want? Like, what do you really, really, really want,
mm-hmm.
you know? And there is no way that UCB doesn't want you to be successful. And there's no way that UCB doesn't give you all the tools to help you become successful.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you want to do something, you know, it's a place where you can hone your talent. So once you take your ego out of it and go, oh, because I got kicked off of a Harold team, that doesn't mean I'm not funny. I just have some things to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And if I do that, I'll do something else. So I think that, like, oh, yeah. And also, you know, I was, you know, Anthony, I was just listening to that podcast that you did with him. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, he talks about working hard and that no one's going to hand it to you. And I just feel like that when I hear that, why should we not work hard? And working hard in an enjoyable way. Like, it shouldn't be such a fight. You should want to work with people and create and be fearless about your comedy
mm-hmm.
and what you're doing. So I think the more chances that you go out there and do it and believe in yourself. Because, I mean, I feel like that's what life is about, too. Like, just challenging yourself to be better.
Sure.
So if I was just on a Harold team doing mediocre work, is that doing me any justice either?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
no. And even if you're on a Harold team doing great work, it's not that alone that gets you successful.
That's right.
You know, it's constant working and developing things. And like you said, finding your voice, finding other things that you love to do.
Yeah. You know? I think that's really important, too, because as much as, you know, and every now and then I think about going back and taking an improv class.
Mm-hmm.
I love Mod Night. I love sketch. I love working on my characters. Mm-hmm. I love doing the show with Megan. Like, I just, there's something that is, you just know it feels right.
Mm-hmm.
And you know when you're doing, like, great work, you know, and
sure.
committing to it.
So yeah. Let's talk about Mod Night.
Okay.
So how do you approach characters in sketches that you get handed with your acting background, your acting training?
Okay. I go through, you know, all the stuff. I was glad that Mike Still and I were able to teach that acting for sketch class
mm-hmm.
because I feel like I attack, and this might sound like nuts, but I feel like I attack a sketch the way with the same tools I would a play. Meaning, every moment is important. I find out what do I want from the other person. I make choices that are grounded and truthful to the character.
Mm-hmm.
I will, you know, a lot of people, some writers want you to improvise, like, with your script. But there's something to be said to at least give a shot and see what the writer and respect the writer's words
mm-hmm.
and work that through and their specific comedy before you decide to take on your own voice with it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I attack it by what's the moment before, you know?
The moment before the sketch starts?
Yeah. Why not start with a moment where if you're like at the door, you know, knocking, why not have like just a little something of the moment before so that you have like an energy to come in with?
Yeah.
And then find different tactics on getting what you want. Like that's, you know, beating out the script is like, this doesn't work. Because a lot of times people are like, well, why am I still in this room? It's the same thing with improv. Like, you don't want to be with me. Well, why am I here? You know what I mean? So find the way that works for you. And I promise if you commit to that, the audience will love it more.
Make the choice of why you're still in this
room.
Make
the choice. And don't like half-ass it. Don't, because that's the whole thing. Like, why, and I'm not saying everyone does this, but with sketch, why is acting take a back seat to, why not elevate your acting in a sketch? Because it's sketch and it might be like silly and funny. But if you think of all the people who are, who we love, they are committed 100% to what they're doing.
Absolutely.
Belushi, Candy, like you, Chris Farley.
You said me there. I heard you say you. You're absolutely right. I'm totally committed. My commitment level to characters is legendary.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it is. Well, remember when we were on a mod team together?
I do remember.
And we were with one of Rachel's sketches.
Yeah.
And we got to improvise.
Oh, that's right. That breakup, that, what was it? The one where I never responded or?
Yeah, you couldn't show emotion.
I couldn't show emotion. Yeah. That's what it was. Yeah.
So like, I understood the game of it.
Sure.
But I knew what I wanted. And you knew what you wanted or wanted to do but couldn't do based on. So I feel like just committing to that when we improvise it, that was like the most fun I've ever had. But it's so, I feel like, you know, what you do on the fly with improv, that you have to make those choices to be successful. You, I feel like you have to do that with sketch as well. It's not just, because, you know, because an audience can smell the fake, funny choice that you're making.
Sure.
And they're not going to.
They can smell the winking at it. They
oh,
can smell
yeah.
the, like, I'm not totally committed to this character.
Right.
I'm just sort of playing this sketch.
Right.
You know, like, this is a sketch. I'm doing it, blah, 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 rather than this is a character that I'm living in.
Yeah. Because isn't that more satisfying or so satisfying to see that? Than just like some artificial performance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for somebody that doesn't have the acting training that you have, what are ways that they can, how would you advise they get there?
Because
we have, you know, a broad range of people
who
are performers here with a broad range of training between like lots and lots of acting classes and just UCB improv classes.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, improv classes will teach you commitment and teach you, you know, playing at the top of your intelligence. But there is a different approach that breaking, knowing how to break down a sketch and knowing how to approach a character from an acting technique would teach you. So for somebody that doesn't have that, that you have, how might you, what advice would you have for them to get there?
Well, I guess, so you could break it up sort of two ways depending on what relates to you. So one way would be like, what's the, you know, at first you could just look at it because we're all comedians if we're here at UCB. Like, what's the funny of the sketch? You can say, what's the game? Like, what's the, what are the beats? So on a very simple scale, you can just maybe look at a sketch and sort of get that idea. Then the other thing I would say is like, for the most people that I've talked to, like, trust your instinct, trust your gut. Don't make a half-assed choice. Like, don't go into it like tippy-toed of whatever choice you're going to make with the character. And pick something that's fun, believable, and just ask yourself, what do you want from the other person in the scene? Like, what do you want? And then just concentrate on that and make that an active choice. Meaning, like, if I just want someone to, like, if I'm in a scene and I just want someone to, like, hug me, or,
right.
Like, I'm going to try different ways to get you to do that. And I think that's active. Or I want a best friend. I want you to smile. Like, those are all active because I can try. It doesn't mean I'm going to be successful. I'm going to have a great time trying.
Sure.
But if I pick something that is just like, it's okay, you know, or like so what we were talking about in the beginning of chatting, like when you pick something that doesn't do anything for you or you're just sort of like half-assed about the choice or it's like the color of like If it doesn't excite you to do the choice, don't do it.
Sure.
And just be truthful. And I think people know when they're being truthful and in a scene, mm-hmm. you know, and
yeah.
not being fake because, I think this is going to be funny. Okay, give it a shot. Like, experiment and try. But if you're being false, and I think most people do, they're just like, let me put this wig on, but it doesn't really make sense. Or let's put this fog machine in. But it's because you don't trust yourself to just simply be funny. And be uh-huh. good. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense.
Okay.
So let's talk a little bit about your show,
yeah.
Love Can Suck a Dick, and So Can I,
mm-hmm.
Which you created with Megan Neuringer.
Yeah.
And you had kind of hinted at this, that it has characters in it that you've been working on for a while.
Yeah.
Right? So, just tell us a little bit about the show, because the show is great.
You
know,
thank you.
Obviously, I've seen it, and it's been running here for a while now,
yeah.
right? Like 3, 4, 5 months? I don't even know.
It opened, I guess, so at first performance was in July.
Wow. I totally lose track of all kinds of time.
Yeah.
So,
no,
yeah.
It's been great. The audience has been great. And this month we're paired with Pam's show, which is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Pam's great.
Yeah.
What were you looking to get out of this show? Like, what were you looking to do?
I think it started off, I had been doing probably the same characters for like 5 years. They're all like doing karaoke. It's like Joe Cajulio, this gypsy lady named Layla, this woman, Sandy, who sings karaoke, Rosalie, you know, this really inappropriate Southern woman. And I've tried it in many different ways. And I felt it was the moment to challenge myself and move on. You know, I was like, you got to do characters you've never done. So I took, Becky was teaching a class here, a solo class.
Becky Drysdale.
Yeah, Becky Drysdale. And in taking that, it really pushed me to create and some new characters. So two of them came from that class. And then when we were working together, you were directing Thunder Gulch.
Yes.
And we were in a meeting, and Carla sort of came out
from that,
where we were talking about, like, what is it?
Yeah.
The Bible. And you're like, somebody write that up. And then Brett wrote a version, and we both wrote separate versions. Mine was about, like, breaking down the Bible or something, and he wrote an awesome, like, breaking it down TV show. So we got to collaborate.
It's like a cable access show, right?
Staten Island cable access.
Yeah.
And Brett was so generous because...
Brett White,
yes, mm-hmm. thank
He's
you.
He's a writer on Thunder Gulch.
Yeah, and when we were creating it together, I was like, you know, I'm also creating characters for a show. How comfortable are you that I'm also doing that? And he was like, oh, big fan. He's like, he just wants people to create and, like, perform. So mm-hmm. he was cool with, you know, having a character in a show that I and then have a character in my show. So, you know, like with Maude Knight and then in Love Can Suck a Dick. So, mm-hmm. So then Megan and I were getting together, and she was working on a show of hers, and I was working on my show, but we would, like, set these writing times so that we would definitely work on our shit together.
Okay.
And we would pitch stuff for each other. And then I submitted a spank of 5 pieces. With this idea of love.
Yeah.
I forgot what the name of it was then. It might have been called Relation Shit, I think I called it.
I don't remember
what
it was.
Which is part 2. all right. So anyway, so I send this and then you got back to me.
Mm-hmm.
You and Anthony were, you submit for the spank. And then I was so... I can't even tell you how I feel like that email changed almost everything for me from, like, starting from the moment I got that email on. Because it's another thing, like...
The email that the spank was not accepted?
Spank was not accepted, but further than not being accepted, it was, we believe you can do better. And the feeling that some people might take is, like, looking at that email and being like, oh, what? Like, you know, like, whatever the ego is, kind of what we're talking about with Harold. Like, I submit a spank, it doesn't get accepted, and, like, they think I could do better, but like I put so much time into it, and it's so good. I'll take it somewhere else, or like you know. But I saw that, and I was like, wow, this is an amazing challenge to rise up to. This is an amazing challenge to do better than I think I can be. Mm-hmm. And so I took that, and I was like, this is awesome. Thank you for that. Let's do a better show than I thought I was capable of. So, you know, one of the suggestions was like maybe work with someone, you know, you maybe not doing it all alone. So Megan and I were talking and she's like, do you feel like you need to write it on your own? Because I'm very connected to what you're doing. And I was like, no, let's create it together. So through our process and through improv and material that I had and Megan's amazing writing, it kind of came together. So mm-hmm. she, you know, wrote with my characters and material that I had. And then we got to do this show that is by far one of the best shows that I've done as of yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great show, and it showcases a lot of your strengths as a performer. It's basically you're approaching the subject of love
yes.
and relationships through these characters.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's so weird. Like, a lot of my characters have a hard time with love mm-hmm. or, like, have an opinion about it or break up or, like, deep and tortured. Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you particularly are fascinated with? Or
I'm fascinated with, but I've never experienced,
uh-huh.
which is,
that's
like,
interesting.
The weirdest thing ever. I mean, like, my husband and I, like, have been together for maybe 13 years.
Wow.
You know, since college. And, yeah, he's the best. Like, I've never been cheated on. Mm-hmm. No one's ever cheated on me. Like, it's...
You're very lucky.
Thank you. I think. yeah, but, like, Megan, on the other hand, had, like, very strong feelings about, like, love and heartbreak. So the whole show is really a combination of both of our experiences. But like the deaf Wendy that happened to me in real life. So that was inspired.
Oh, really?
By that. Yeah. I was in a bar and this like very sexually aggressive woman who kind of looked like a female version of Artie Lang, got really inappropriate with us. So that's where that piece came about. And then the rest of, yeah, the material came about.
And of course that deaf character you also got to do on 30 Rock.
Oh yeah.
Which must have been crazy.
It was, like, I almost shit my pants. It was amazing.
Really?
Like, a dream. It was a dream. Like, Alec Baldwin was, like, sitting a coffee table away, mm-hmm. you know, in a tiny coffee table at that. And we got to, like, improvise. And there was one moment at the end of the scene where he's like, he got up and like grabbed me and held me close like a big hug and then left. And then he's like, I don't know if we should do that. And I'm going, no, I think it's great. I think you should totally do that. Do that again.
So in that scene, what did you want from Alec Baldwin's character?
Oh, wow. Interesting. It was very simple. Like I wanted a job. Because they even say, like, I thought it was an interview.
Right.
So, like, I think I just wanted to impress him. But what happened by the end of it, because he throws up in it. So, like, I wanted to impress him, but because of the situation that had happened, I couldn't, but I had to react differently. So mm-hmm. it was just read. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes total sense.
So, like, I went in with that. So you could see how I polite, like, so the moment before, he's like, tell me when, you know, I'm thinking of what the moment before is. And then that's why very sweetly I'm like, I thought it was a job interview. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to know what it is. But then it turns horribly wrong afterwards.
And so you're also in, so you've been doing that show for a while, and you're also in Chris Kelly's show, Oh My God, I Heard You're Dying.
Yeah.
And you've been in a couple of other, you've been in a lot of internet videos as of late as well. What's that experience like? What is there anything different that you bring to that, acting for the camera and doing these quick web videos, that is anything different, the way you approach that and the way you approach stage stuff? I barely got that question out of my mouth. Did you hear that? Something happened in my brain in the middle of asking that question.
No, I filled in the blanks. I gotcha.
Well, thank God you did.
You know, I realize lately, I think the time to prepare has gotten, like, shorter and shorter.
Mm-hmm.
Of, like, because sometimes you'll just, like, go in and they want you to, like, improvise. Or it's like, hey, can you do this video tomorrow? And I think the more you do it, the easier it is to make choices that are really clear and just stick with it. So that's what I've noticed mostly about video. And I'm probably not as, you know, subtlety goes a long way. And maybe in videos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I had a teacher that was like, a lot of people are like, should I take a film class? Should I take a theater class, you know, for acting? And she's like, I don't know, you just don't talk as loud when you're on the studio.
Great.
She's like, why would you change, you know, that much? I know a lot of people have feelings about, you know, what it is, but you might need to know, like, where you're, you know, what you, like, you shooting me from here, you know, the neck up. But no, it's the same.
Mm-hmm.
And just a lot more fun. And
now, do you, you kind of hinted at this before, but do you find yourself more confident in your abilities as an improviser within a sketch, like where you kind of know what the game is and where you're starting from, where you're ending?
Mm-hmm.
Does that feel to you more comfortable than in your kind of lower, less confident days on Harold Knight? Is there a difference
between improvising in a sketch and then if I were like now to
go? Like if somebody were to ask you, you know, somebody says, here's the sketch and you can also play around with it.
Yeah.
Do you feel more confident in that than those times where, like you said, you maybe weren't sure what to do or if you were making the right choices in an improv scene?
If it's, you know, I would probably say yes.
Mm-hmm.
Although when we're just doing like a jam, because I've done now, like I do more jams with people that like I've always wanted to improvise with.
Sure.
I, by working on sketch so much, that has become easier.
Huh.
Because you can feel the rhythm of the improv scene. So I'm not really coming from a writer's point of view, like the next beat, but I can. It's almost easier to get that pattern and get that next beat because of how much sketch I have worked on.
So the technique of working on sketch comedy has helped you in your improv technique.
100%. Although I, you know, even now, I haven't taken a Harold class in a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm excited that if I am able to get into like another class or when I decide to take another class, how that has even helped within Harold,
mm-hmm.
because of the structure and being able to do those beats, you know, and I think working on sketch has helped that.
That's great.
100%.
So what else is, what's coming up for you?
What's happening now? let's see. What's happening now? Well, we're taking the show back to L.A.,
Oh, great.
UCB on L.A.
You're taking Love Can Suck a Dick back to L.A.?
Yeah, second time on the 26th, mm-hmm. so at the end of January. And, you know, I got a couple of shows in the works.
Yeah?
Yeah, with a couple of peeps.
Okay.
And, you know, we have our Love Can Suck a Dick, mm-hmm. which, I mean, it's so different every night because of a little bit of the improv that is in the show.
Sure, yeah. There are sections of audience interaction and improvisation.
Yeah, which is like, those moments are like amazingly terrifying. It's so interesting.
Because you never know what you're going to get.
You never know what you're going to get, but all I say is like, I'm so into the character, I can't worry about it, you know? So, like, I don't really think about it too much, and I walk off stage going, I can't believe I said that. but I feel like if I just commit to the character, you know, they'll know what to do. But it's been, like, night and day, the different people, because it's not the audience's responsibility to be a part of my show. You know what I mean? Like, they're there to
That's
see
really
the
interesting.
Show.
It's your responsibility to make them a part of it.
And yeah, so, like, anything they give are gifts. And I can't be mad if they're, like, a dick that they don't want to be in the show, you know?
Yeah.
Because they're there to see it.
Right. And there's no pre-knowledge of, like, you may be a part of the show. It's just kind of what it is.
It's what it is. And, like, you know, one part, I'm not even asking for a volunteer. I'm literally asking you, you know, some questions. And so you didn't even know you were going to be a part of the show. I still love doing the show. That's mm-hmm. great. And so that's the other thing, too, about what we were talking about creating. I think UCB, to sound still, like, serious and cheesy, I think people should take advantage of the resources and the community mm-hmm. to be able to create. together different things. So I think that's what's exciting.
I think that's a great point, too, because there's so many people in this community, like, find one or two people that click with you.
Yeah.
And that share your sensibility and that you're interested in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because then you can create great stuff. Like, I think working with Megan has been unbelievable. Like, we obviously bring out the best in each other comedically. Mm-hmm. So it's exciting to find out what the next thing we might work together on, or, you know, that you have that with someone else. And just keep on creating and work for it, because, you know, that's how things happen.
That's great. Well, yeah. I think you're great. You know that.
I think you're great.
I adore you. You were a joy to direct.
Thank you. You were. Can we just say you're an amazing director?
Oh, come on. This is not about me.
But let's, for like one quick second of this podcast, talk about you directing. Like, it's not every day do you have such a confident director that will allow you to play as much.
Well, I love that. I mean, that's what I'm all about, is like, let people do what they're good at.
Yeah. Well, you also have an acting background.
I do, yeah.
So do we have time just for real quick?
For what?
For you?
I guess
so,
yeah. For
you to perform Shakespeare. No, okay. For you to just talk a second about sort of what I was talking about, acting.
Yeah.
And then sketch.
Yeah.
And how you come from the point of directing.
Uh-huh.
Those that either have acting background or that don't, and what you feel.
About how I approach directing?
How you have your...
How do I direct actors?
So you're an actor.
Right.
You're a writer.
Right.
You've directed.
Sure.
You're on Harold.
Yes.
How is there, all those things help you in Harold? And then do you put your acting towards being on a Harold? We'll start with that.
Well, I mean, first of all, let's talk about how great and in demand of an actor I am. I mean, people are constantly like, be in my web video, be in my sketch. I mean, I'm turning down acting offers left and right.
Excuse me.
One of the most well-regarded actors and performers and sought after.
Yeah, there was a little video about an oil spill.
Yeah, that I, all right, yes, that's one video about an oil spill.
That became huge.
That's true, it did become huge.
You were on camera.
I was.
As well.
That was, you know, it's like, it's a tortoise and the hare kind of thing, because there are people who do a lot of videos and like gradually accrue respect and success and a body of work.
Yeah.
And then there's like, you make one video, it gets over 10 million hits, you're on CNN, and then that is it.
You are done for the rest of your life.
Apparently. But, I mean, I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent, but, I mean, it does. All those things kind of, improvising definitely helps everything. My training here at UCB has helped everything. Like, knowing game, knowing commitment, knowing acting and reacting helps me as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely helps me as a director, because I just know, like, you have to know what the game is. The writer has to know what the game is. If the writer can't tell me what the game is, then they don't know what it is. Then there is no game here.
Right.
You know? And then, like, once you know that, then you can, you know, the actors can play the game.
Right.
You know, and they can make moves and they can make choices that are on game. And then you know whether a choice is off game or not. And then you know whether a choice is off game, but it's still funny, so who gives a shit?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
If it's just a little thing, not something that derails the sketch.
That's right, yeah.
But yeah, so all that stuff. And acting, honestly, when I was on a mod team as an actor, it did help me as an improviser, because it kind of jogged those acting things that I studied in college. And, like, I remembered those things about, oh, commit more and, like, play the sketch, play the scene more.
Yeah. You
know? And in terms of directing, I had a really shitty director in high school who taught me everything about how not to direct actors.
Right.
And then everything else is just, like, my biggest thing is let people be funny. Let people do what they're going to do.
Yeah.
You know, let people make the choices they're going to make and then go through them and say, yep, that works. No, pull back on that a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
It's so interesting that you're talking about the directing, because my teacher also said, like, there are very rarely you're going to work with, like, a great director.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to know how to, like, do your thing.
Yeah.
To be successful. So, like, the more you know about all those different facets, I think just make you a better performer or creator at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, if somebody's great and has a great choice, let them make it.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody doesn't have a choice, tell them, you know, give them a choice or help them get to a choice.
Yeah.
You know, or see what they're doing and then push them in different directions.
Yeah, which I feel like degree. You know what everyone's strengths are, and then we're able to have the language to be able to put them in a way that not only makes the sketch successful, but also the performer successful as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this has been great.
It's been great. It was so more, definitely more serious than I thought.
Really?
Great. Well, yeah. I think I thought we were just going to like sing 80s tunes.
I wish. No, that's a separate podcast I have where I sing 80s tunes.
And I wasn't on that first?
You're going to be on that next week.
Okay, perfect.
It's called 99 Podcast Balloons.
Ooh.
Oh, boy.
That's great.
Okay, so yeah, this has been great. Thanks so much for coming on. When is your show?
Friday the 21st at 7:30 p.m.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So go see that. Go to UCBtheater.com to find out other things about Leslie. Go to UCBcomedy.com to see videos that she's been in. You have a website?
I do.
Okay. What is it?
It's
Why do you look so trepidatious when I ask you what that is?
I know, right?
Is it like an Angel Fire page? Is it under construction? Is there like a splash page first and then you go to the content and it's all big beveled and embossed buttons?
That'd be amazing. It is now. Now when you go to that, it'll be everything that John just threw out there. No, because it has the word Weebly in it, because Weebly is you can do free websites.
Okay.
So it's just weird. But it's www.lesliemeisel.weebly.com.
Great. Well, everybody go there right now.
You can, check it out.
All right. And thanks for listening to the UCB Theater Podcast. We'll be back next week with either me or Will or both of us. And we'll see you then. Thanks.